Chapter 12. Pride, Not Pity. The clinic was becoming overcrowded. "If this continues," said Dr. Warnance one day, "we'll have to start putting them on the roof." It looked like that, for the room often resembled a traffic jam. It was so bad that sometimes I could barely hear myself think. Things were getting desperate when I suddenly heard that the clinic was going to move to another part of the city, to a bigger place, on a more convenient site. It was about this time that Dr. Warnance left to take up a post abroad. Mr. Gallagher, too, left soon afterwards for Canada. Just as the clinic was improving, two of its best workers left. On a warm summer morning 3 years ago, I went to the new clinic for the first time. It was in a place called Bull Alley Street. Compared to the old clinic, it was a very posh place indeed. It was even better inside. There were three rooms: the treatment room, the school room, and the playroom. In the treatment room, of course, we receive our exercises, which are often quite a spectacle. In the school room, the children who have never been able to attend normal schools because of their difference are given an ordinary primary education under a qualified teacher. Thus, one more link is forged in helping those children to establish ordinary contact with ordinary people. They are very proud of the fact that they too can go to school, have books and desks, and learn sums like their sisters and brothers at home. They are always boasting about their teacher and the way she helps them. They never get hit like the children in the common schools. Here the teacher concentrates more on their minds than on their hands. In this way, instead of feeling inferior to normal children, they are taught to think of themselves as equals. In the playroom, a lot goes on. Here the word play has a double meaning. It also means work. Under the guise of playing, the children are taught to develop proper hand and foot movements and to correct wrong ones. To a stranger looking on, they seem to be just playing at tables and running about the same as ordinary children, all the time making a lot of noise. That is so. The difference is that while they run so happily about, they are constantly being watched to see that they do not relapse into their original wrong physical movements. It is not enough to run about. They must be taught to run about properly, to play and chase around the room in the right way. Bernie, one of the children attending the clinic, is a great favourite of mine, as she is with everyone. She is an excellent example of what the clinic can do for even hopeless cases. She was one of the first patients at the clinic. She was only 2 years old when I first saw her. We went to the clinic in the same ambulance every morning. I used to watch her as she lay before me on the stretcher, but all I could see of her were her eyes staring out of a tiny elfin face. She was so small that her eyes seemed to be the biggest part of her. They alone showed that this thing, wrapped up in the blanket like a child's doll, was a human creature. Slowly, bit by bit, she began to display more life and to take more interest in the things that were going on around her, as though she were gradually thawing out. The stage was reached when she could be given exercises specially designed for her, and today Bernie is one of the clinic's liveliest patients, as well as being one of its showpieces. Her greatest rival at the clinic is Dorothy, and to watch them together, each trying to do better than the other at exercises, is much better than a pantomime. Dorothy is a very important person, and very charming too. She was one of the worst cases to arrive at the clinic, but she has improved so much since then that many people who saw her at the start of her treatment can hardly recognise her as the same little girl today. By degrees, as the months went on, she was taught, first of all, to relax on a blanket spread out on the floor, then to improve her sitting posture, And finally, to stand a little with the barest minimum of support. Next thing that had to be improved was her walking. And for this, she had to wear specially made wooden skis to give her good hand support, proper foot position, and to improve her stance generally. Now Dorothy is able to move about properly on her hands and knees and is beginning to take a few slow, hesitant steps on her own. She is one of the most charming little creatures imaginable, with her large brown eyes, her scattered black curls, and the little snub nose that always wrinkles up when she smiles that infectious smile of hers. I myself have improved quite a lot within the last 2 years at the clinic. The first thing I had to be taught was to relax. That may sound easy, but I find it the most difficult part of the morning's work. To relax one's muscles completely, it is necessary to relax one's mind first. To give one's thoughts free rein without any conscious guidance or inclination towards any particular object. Today, working under the expert instruction of Dr. Mary O'Donnell, who now supervises the clinic, and Miss Barbara Allen, one of the three physiotherapists that form the staff, I have reached the stage where I am now learning to walk on specially made skis, like those which little Dorothy uses, and to make more use of my hands. Speech has always been one of the biggest obstacles in my effort to make ordinary contact with people. It has been one aspect of my handicap that has caused me the bitterest pain, for without speech, one is practically lost. Writing is all very well, but there are some emotions that cannot be conveyed, that cannot be felt through the written word alone. Now, however, I am beginning to speak more and grunt less. This is due to the special treatment I have been receiving from the clinic speech therapist, Dr. Patricia Sheehan. The first lesson I learned was to breathe properly and deeply. I knew I could never speak properly unless I learned to control my breathing. I found after some months that my speech had improved considerably. I took greater care to articulate each word slowly and distinctly, and to say what I wanted to say calmly and without any of my usual fuss. Now I can speak quite well, if only I take my time about it and do not get anxious when I cannot pronounce a word clearly. Basically, the whole cause of my speech difficulty lies in my attitude to it. Today, I am speaking with greater self-confidence and less self-consciousness. I know I can never lead a full, healthy social life unless I can speak so that others will understand me. And to achieve this, I must work hard and practice long. It will not be easy, and I can never expect perfection or a job on the BBC. But the great progress I have made under Dr. Sheehan is an indication that if I try hard enough, it's not impossible, and I shall certainly try. The women who form the staff at the clinic, Dr. O'Donnell, Dr. Sheehan, Mrs. Francis Prince, Miss Dorothy Henderson, Miss Allen, Miss Joyce McCrory, and Miss Una Kennedy, the schoolteacher, have all done and are doing a splendid job. They all emanate friendliness and understanding, and though it is necessary for them to be a little stern now and then when their patients become lazy and inattentive, that sternness never hardens into coldness. No matter how strict they become, one can see a glow on their faces and a light in their eyes as they look over the heads of the children at one another. To enter the clinic is to enter at once into its spirit, the spirit that animates and flows through it like a wave surging from eye to eye and heart to heart. It is the spirit of pride, not pity.